It's about party politics, and that's really frustrating when you have a child at death's door in a life and death situation.
A part of the federal health care law that isn't available in Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, March 28th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, dancers from around the world gather in Bethel for Chamai.
What do you like about Chamai?
Everything.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Association of Alaska School Boards. AASB believes in investing in early childhood development. It can produce great dividends for kids and our state. More information at aasb.org. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2011 PFD and consider sharing a portion with your favorite charity through Pick, Click, Give. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
One of the most popular parts of the one-year-old national health care law is now in place for many Americans. Kids can stay on their parents' insurance longer until age 26, but not for Alaska's state retirees. Governor Sean Parnell decided not to offer them the benefit. That's upsetting to one family who could have used it. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Jeff Bocart's 25-year-old daughter was unstoppable until last fall when she got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
It was quite a shock to all of us and the whole community because she really was health itself, a tall, strapping gal who canned her own fish and did her own gardens and long been conscientious of what she ate. It was just one of those things that kind of showed everybody that this kind of thing can happen to anybody.
Bocart is a retired teacher and lives outside Haines with his wife. Once their daughter hit her early 20s, she couldn't be on their health care plan, so she didn't have insurance because her job working with disabled Alaskans offered about 30 hours a week, just under the number needed to qualify for employer coverage. Because the health care law, signed by President Obama last year, says kids can be covered on their parents' plans up to age 26, the Bocarts thought their daughter could benefit. But Jeff's wife, Adrienne, found out otherwise.
She called, and she was told by the person on the other end that children of retirees are not covered. Well, I was very disappointed in that.
As the Bocart's daughter struggled to find insurance, she started her chemotherapy treatments, and the bills racked up. She did eventually get coverage through the state's program for those who can't get insurance elsewhere, but she's in debt because of the early, uninsured treatments. To Jeff Bocart, it would have been faster and a lot less stressful to get her on the family's insurance plan. He blames politics.
I mean, you know, let's face it, to some people involved with this, you know, it doesn't have to do whether there's a real need or not. It's about party politics, and that's really frustrating when you have a child at death's door in a life and death situation.
Republican Governor Sean Parnell is fighting the health care law because he says its order that everyone have insurance is unconstitutional. When asked about the retiree benefits, he instead emphasized his stance against the law.
We continue to fight the federal health care law in the court system through the appellate process. We'll continue to stand up for Alaskans.
But to the Bocart family, fighting the law isn't standing up for Alaskans. Governor Parnell told reporters at a recent press conference that he couldn't weigh in on the issue of retiree benefits.
When it comes to the state retiree issue you've identified, I actually need to go back and get further information on where we stand with that in our budget process. So I can't answer that question for you right now.
Parnell's acting director for the Division of Retirement and Benefits, Jim Puckett, says because the feds left it optional to include retirees, the state's not doing it. It has enough on its plate that's mandatory and costly.
Until we know what the full bill is going to be for all of the provisions, the other areas that the state's going to have to comply with, until we know what the bill is for that, well, then let's not put on anything that we don't have to. Maybe we'll do it in the future, but we just won't do it now.
Puckett says any new benefits to the retiree plan would have to be paid for by the state, which he says is not prudent. In fact, he calls it immoral to rack up more costs in tight budget times.
It would be foolish for me to go get a loan for a boat or some other recreational vehicles, something that I didn't have to do. That's the way we looked at it. It is a mandate from the federal government, but in this case, they said we're not going to enforce it.
The Parnell administration estimates including up to 26-year-olds on the retiree plan would cost the state $1.5 million a year. One Parnell official did call that number relatively small. Anchorage Democratic Senator Hollis French says he's willing to pay that much, but the cost may even be an overestimate because people in their 20s are relatively healthy.
This is an easy one. This is a no-brainer. Kids are inexpensive to insure. They're generally healthy, but like every other American, they're subject to catastrophic illnesses that come out of nowhere, whether through an accident or whether, you know, it's a disease you didn't anticipate. Every other American is getting the benefit of this new reform because the Affordable Care Act in general has instituted it very, very widely, carving out this one little narrow exception. Let's close it.
Governor Parnell's office says it's up to the legislature to act. So Democratic Anchorage Senator Betty Davis has a bill that would cover the kids of retirees up to age 26. Senator French signed on this week to be a co-sponsor. Meanwhile, Jeff Bocart says the town of Haines threw fundraisers for his sick daughter and did what it could to help her out.
It's heartwarming to see that the community has stepped up and helped out our daughter when the state has dropped the ball, you know.
Bocart says there's a happy ending to this story for now. His daughter's cancer is in remission. Her expensive treatments seem to have worked. Now the 25-year-old has to pay off her medical bills. Bocart is confident his independent daughter can do it, but he says a parent never wants to see their child start her adult life in debt. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
The state legislature is headed into the last 3 weeks of this year's session, and there's concern over the time it will take to fix the Coast Management Program. Two ideas have been presented in bills. One, a six-year extension without any changes to the development and permit coordinating program, the other with a simple one-year extension. Without an extension, the program will be forced to completely cease operations by July 1st. Both of those bills are still in their first committees of reference, and only one of them, the governor's six-year extension, has been heard by legislators. That bill has been heard seven times by the House Resources Committee, where co-chair Eric Feige wants an extension for as long as possible. He says changes can be dealt with later.
It's important that we send the right signals to the investment community throughout the world, throughout this country, that Alaska is open for business. By having that program go away, we don't encourage that. We don't give industry a positive feeling that we're ready to deal with the issues at hand.
But supporters of the Coastal Management Program want it made stronger.
6 years, are they going to be around here 6 years to fix it? I doubt it.
That's Bethel's Senator Lyman Hoffman, who says there's still time this year to change the system, and at the most, he sees the program will only need another year to finish work on the extension. Bush Caucus Chairman Reggie Jewell of Kotzebue also says there's no reason to separate the extension from the changes. He says there's time, and delay will not accomplish anything.
You know, I have heard for 5 years that we're going to get to this. And now we're facing a sunset. And why would we let an opportunity go by where reasonable people can get together?
House Minority Leader Beth Kurtula agrees there's time for change this year. She says it's in the best interest of various developmental industries, such as oil and mining, to have a strong working management program. Military members under the age of 21 would be allowed to legally drink and smoke under a bill introduced by an Alaska lawmaker. Republican Representative Bob Lynn says that neither he nor the bill advocates drinking or smoking as a general practice. But he says both support equal treatments for adults and the de facto adults in America's military. The legal drinking age in Alaska is 21. The legal smoking age is 19. The bill has been referred to two House committees for consideration. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the lucrative herring fishery in Sitka may not be as lucrative this year.
Even though you might get good roe recovery, it's not the right size for what the market demands.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
AT&T, rethink possible. Details at att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266.
The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2011 PFD. Paper applications are available at the same 270 statewide locations as last year. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
The Sitka Sound herring sack roe fishery went on two-hour notice today, meaning the first opening of one of Alaska's most lucrative fisheries could get underway at any moment now. While anticipation is high as the fleet prepares to fish, so is speculation about prices for this year's harvest of herring eggs. That's because Japan is the main market. Lottie Kay has the story.
Are we ready, gentlemen?
Ready.
Okay.
It's 9 a.m. in Jamestown Bay, 3 miles south of downtown Sitka. Herring Sakura fishery permit holder Chip Trinan is rallying his seining crew to run a test set aboard the Corinne Brit.
The big set, you can also see some of these bubbles coming up. You can see the birds are on one side of the net, corks are all down on the other. You can see the fish starting to hit the surface. You see all these little bubbles coming up here too. That also would indicate that there's fish under there. This is a huge set right here.
The Corinne Brit set had a mature roe percentage of 4.4. That statistic, combined with a set made north of Sitka that showed herring with mature roe at 9.5%, helped the Alaska Department of Fish and Game announce the fleet would go on two-hour notice Monday at 8 a.m. Last year, a statewide averaging of fish tickets showed an in-season ex-vessel price of $690 a ton for herring roe. So far this year, processors have been reluctant to reveal a price, but economists and industry specialists expect the price to be much lower than in previous years, despite a large potential harvest. In Japan, herring roe, or kazunoko, is a delicacy eaten at New Year. After being fished up during the spring in waters off Alaska, British Columbia, and California, it is usually processed and shelved till November and December when it is sold for as much as $100 a pound. But after the recent earthquake and tsunami that happened along Japan's northern coast, the market for herring roe is in doubt.
We look at this year in particular, Japan has suffered a major trauma to its economy and to its society and to distribution.
Guttenapp is a professor of economics at the University of Alaska Anchorage's Institute of Social and Economic Research. He says that Japanese interest in the traditional New Year delicacy has been on a decades-long decline, and the tsunami has only further depressed markets.
The economy will be severely disrupted, and in general, in that kind of situation, higher-priced products are going to suffer more of a demand decline in demand than staple products.
Two of the nine Japanese members in a herring roe trade group with Canada suffered major problems to their logistics and storage facilities. Christina Burge is the secretary and treasurer of the Canadian Pacific Kazunoko Association. She says the Canadian fleet did not fish its 16,000 tons of allowable catch this year.
We saw a massive increase in abundance this year, but the fish were very small. And what we were hearing from Japan was that since they have been extremely unwilling to buy small San Francisco fish, they were equally unwilling to buy small same fish from Canada.
On a larger scale, Burge sees herring roe markets headed for a disaster if they stay limited to Japanese demand. More immediately important to the Sitka herring fishing fleet is the age of the fish caught this year, according to Department of Fish and Game Regional Management biologist Dave Gordon. Older fish produce a larger number and size of egg, and this might be a consideration if the market is more limited and selective this year.
Well, what happens with herring sometimes is the older fish come in sooner than the younger fish or are ready to spawn before the younger fish are. So the later fish, which typically are the younger age classes, are less desirable in the market. Even though you might get good roe recovery, it's not the right size for what the market demands. And so that will be an important factor this year.
Processing company Icicles fleet manager Randy Lantine said the distribution of age classes and weight don't signal an unmarketable egg abundance or size to him. The department forecasts an average weight of 151 grams of fish this year. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Maladi Kay.
With images and stories of Japan's post-earthquake plight daily filling the media, many Alaskans have become more concerned about how safe we are. Recently, large public interest in a disaster preparedness gathering in Anchorage meant the meeting had to move from the Municipal Office of Emergency Management to the Anchorage Assembly Chambers. KSKA's Lynn Anderson reports.
Dawn Brantley is the office's community preparedness coordinator. She says, unlike other major earthquakes producing widespread damage, Japan's situation understandably has created higher levels of concern among Alaskans.
It's pretty easy to kind of write off when an earthquake hits in a third world country because they weren't really prepared or their building codes weren't up to speed. But then something like this happens in a country like Japan and we see that, no, these can really be problematic for countries who have good building codes, who have outreach for preparedness.
Brantley says as large and devastating as it was, the Japan earthquake supports current danger and safety teachings.
The leading cause of death during an earthquake is actually being struck by falling debris. This can be a bookshelf falls over, you're trying to evacuate a building, and some non-structural architectural thing falls off on you, an awning, some decoration on a building.
As for protecting yourself during an earthquake, the operative phrase is drop, cover, and hold. That means drop to the ground, take cover under, say, a heavy table or desk, and hang on to it. Running, Brantley says, is not always an option.
When an earthquake shakes, it doesn't just go up and down. It kind of rolls and does what's called lateral shaking, like waves underneath the floor.
She described two dangerous earthquake myths. First, doorways are no stronger than any other part of the house. What's more, the swinging doors often cause injuries. The other myth involves the so-called golden triangle. That supposed safety measure calls for getting between a large object, like a couch, and the wall. If the building collapses, then you supposedly are protected by the wall and the object propping themselves together above you. But what Brantley says is more apt to happen, the lateral wave action can crush the person against the wall. She says the golden triangle theory arose from early tests that only used a vertical collapsing motion and not waves. She also offered preparedness tips, which are available at Anchorage's Office of Emergency Management website, as well as that of FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. They included earthquake safety checklists, the crucial importance of the disaster registry for seniors and people with functional disabilities, organizing a neighborhood emergency watch, how schools will and will not function as emergency shelters, and diagrammed instructions on battening down falling debris possibilities in homes and offices. After the meeting, Brantley offered a post-earthquake observation about Japanese preparedness.
All of their buildings that were built to their strict codes survived without much damage to structure at all. What we saw collapsing were the residential and the wood buildings. And so their code worked really well. And the question is, will ours work as well?
Brantley says FEMA is already examining whether or not to raise U.S. national requirements closer to those of Japan's. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
One answer to our state's declining oil production? Port McKenzie Rail Project. The link from the Alaska Railroad to a deepwater port will bring billions in mineral production and thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska Susitna Borough.
The three-day Chamay Dance Festival, which features Yupik dancing, was held in Bethel over the weekend. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes reports.
About 15 Yupik dance groups from around the YK Delta took to the stage. But the weekend wasn't all Yupik. A Tsimshian dance group from Southeast Alaska wore bold black and red costumes. They sang, spun around, and shook large rattle-like sticks. Standing near a side entrance was Martha Dementev, who's from Kasigluk. She wore a bright yellow Chamay volunteer bib over her shirt and was volunteering all weekend long.
Because I want to help. They're working hard.
What do you like about Chamay?
Everything.
The Chamay Dance Festival also featured a native craft sale. Dozens of tables covered in native art filled the lobby in one hallway of the high school. At the very end of the hallway was Mabel Pequeño from the coastal village of Chivac. She and her sister had been selling their Chupik dolls. Many of the dolls wore fish skin clothing.
Do you have a favorite doll?
She's already gone.
Tell me about her.
What she was carrying was a headdress with beads and a butterfly down her. My kid's favorite is this one. This old lady right there.
Looks like she has a rabbit ruff, a white hair, a white ruff with red.
And rabbit.
Her hair is wolf.
Yeah, this one.
Besides Alaska Native groups, the festival brings in international dancers like the Hmong Lion Dancers from Laos in Southeast Asia. The young dancers wore black and hot pink costumes with silver coin tassels. The public could meet them in an up-close and personal session, which happens in a classroom setting. Dance leader Larry Yang describes their style of dance.
The hand moving, the feet moving has meaning to it. Sometimes you may not understand that what's happening, but the different song and different movement is different meaning.
Jason Larson from Nebuskiak says Chamay is crowded, but he comes anyway.
I just want to see the performers. I don't really care too much about a lot of people. Just want to see the performers. And
I love meeting people.
For Dan Charles of Bethel, the crowd is an attraction. He says he never misses a Chamay Dance Festival.
I come here every year. Even if I don't know people, then I meet a lot of people here and find out some of my relatives, which, you know, I not know till, you know, I meet them here. And that's how I learn my family tree.
One of Charles's favorite parts of Chamay is seeing young people perform.
I see some young kids today were really good. I mean, there was Alaknak dancers had two, a boy and a girl, are really interested in doing that. And I just enjoy watching kids. You know, they're going to grow to be, you know, the new elders.
Chamay Dance Festival started Friday evening and ran until Sunday night in Bethel. I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
Members of tribal groups such as Ho-Chunk, Navajo, and Sioux traveled to Anchorage from South Dakota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Canada for the Ida Aina Powwow, which was hosted by the Tabona Foundation, a nonprofit formed to benefit the people of Tyonek. It hosted the gathering and a benefit concert held at the Denina Center in downtown Anchorage over the weekend. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes reports.
Menominee MC Tony Brown of Wisconsin led the powwow through a grand entry, honor songs for veterans, intertribal round dances, and performances by individuals and groups. Lower 48 tribal dancers wore regalia decorated with beads, ribbons, satin applique, feather bustles, porcupine quill headdresses, and bells. Saturday night, several Alaska Native musicians and bands performed, including Allison Warden, Medicine Dream, Bamiwa, and Mark Brown and the Blues Team. He actor and rapper Lightfoot was the featured act. He's been in films such as Mortal Kombat Annihilation and Indian in the Cupboard, as well as television shows. Lightfoot brings his heritage as a member of the Eastern Band of Cherokee into his performances with Cherokee dance steps and tribalistic funk music. At the end of the music, Lightfoot crouched at the edge of the stage and spoke to the audience of mostly teenagers and 20-somethings. He told them they can find their purpose in life through prayer and to fight for their people by abstaining from alcohol and drugs.
Let me tell you something. Until you stand up, we ain't never, ever gonna be equal. Where are you, the warriors? Where are the warriors? Those who stand up and fight for our next generations. Stand. Be the one.
Acting director of the Tabona Foundation, Emil McCord, says it recently began managing grants and scholarship programs previously run by the Tyonic Village Corporation and Siri Foundation. He says concert proceeds will fund activities such as subsistence camps and participation in the Native Youth Olympics.
As long as there's tribal members in there, we'll make that donation. And it's culturally oriented, educational. And we'll make a donation. We took over the scholarships, and our scholarships have tripled since we started managing it.
McCord says a subsidiary of Tyonic Native Corporation provided $50,000 in seed money to launch the powwow, which will become an annual event. In Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Melody Kay in Sitka, Len Anderson and Jocelyn Estes in Anchorage, and Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Kristen Spack. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Doyon Limited, based in Alaska's interior, growing across the nation. Full Circle. Full Circle grows, picks, and delivers fresh, certified organic produce year-round. More information about their 400-acre farm and their organic partners at fullcircle.com.
And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees.
To protect our environment, dispose of medication safely at an authorized community medication disposal event or follow these steps. 1. Place medications in a sealable plastic bag with coffee grounds or kitty litter. 2. Add water to dissolve the medications. 3. Seal the bag and place in the trash. The Alaska Safe Medication Alliance and the Drug Enforcement Administration are hosting medication disposal events statewide on April the 30th. Visit www.akila.org/rx. This message is sponsored by South Central Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.